This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Steve Beauvais. With market insights and so much more. Talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais on AM 790 WPRV.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is your station for talking business, AM 790. Phone numbers for the next hour, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. I'm just laughing because I left the office a while ago and I said something about we're going to pod this show tonight. Daniel was going to record it at the office and make a podcast. And my young son thought that was pretty funny, his old 60-year-old father saying, "We're going to pod it." That was the last thing that happened in the office when I left. Pretty funny. But yeah, if you want to check out our podcasts here on the website, 790business.com, you can play back past shows and all kinds of great information and entertainment as well. Our purpose here is education and entertainment. Wednesday night is, I think, the most entertaining night. Nathan brings his love of history to the table, and we refer to him fondly as the professor, the history professor. He and I both have a love of history. When I was younger, I didn't. I thought it was boring. But when I got a little older, I was fascinated by history. And to the extent that Nathan and I believe that there's so much fascinating stuff in history that actually happened, that he and I really don't read any fiction stuff. Neither one of us really have much interest in that stuff. There's plenty of drama and excitement in real life. I don't need to read made-up stuff. So it's just a matter of a twist on things. Hey, the markets were up all across the board today. Wednesday, all negative, all red. Today, the Dow gained 72 points. The NASDAQ gained just 6. S&P and the Russell up just slightly. Year-to-date, the global Dow is up about 1%. Global Dow means, you know, U.S. about 60% and 40% overseas. I believe, just my opinion, that that is a proper mix today and a very good representation of stock performance on a global basis. Today, you cannot have just U.S. investments. May 7th, I believe, of this year will be my 40th anniversary in my career. Thank you very much, young man. My producer's clapping for me. Thank you. The reason I mentioned that was that long ago when I began, I was fascinated and very proud at that time. I was very young, you know, to learn that 75% of the stocks in the world that you could invest in were American companies. 40 years later, it's the opposite. 75% of the stocks in the world are not American companies. It's changed quite a bit. And I think that a lot of people avoid having international because USA, I believe if you had to pick one market for the long run, I would still pick the USA as the most reliable stock market. But I believe, especially when rates are rising like now, you definitely need to have a global flair to your portfolio. It adds more diversification. It makes things safer. But if you're staring at the S&P 500 and comparing it to a portfolio that has international stocks in it, usually it's not going to keep up. It's going to be safer, more diverse, especially in a world of potential nuclear war. Something Nathan had said a few times was, I thought, pretty smart. He said, we've reached a point in time where one person can do so much damage with a suitcase, you know. And so that scares me. And if you're responsible for other people's money, it should scare you. And so conservative is definitely the nature and responsible here on the Money Talk program, that's for sure. We don't believe in market timing. I don't take my money out of stocks completely. I never did it ever in 40 years. I'm not ever going to do it. My allocation currently is about 60% risk assets and 40% safe. Moderate. Sounds like a good thing to be at age 60. Moderate. If you're 25 years old, don't be moderate. Be aggressive. I was. You want those? You want all those mutual funds that scare me now when you're young. They go up and down like crazy, but you're just going to keep buying them and buying them and buying them for 20 years and ignore the up and down. When an investment fund drops by 40%, it's hard to ignore it when you have $1 million invested, because that means on paper you just went down $400,000. That's, you know, not a comfortable thing, even for a professional. So I think the closer you get to your goals, you should calm down on risk. And that's really what I'm getting in my office now. Almost every new client that comes in is coming in for advice on how to reduce their risk right now. And I think that's a good idea. If you're anywhere near my age, does that mean the market's going to go down tomorrow? I don't know. We don't try to market predict ever on this show. We don't do it in our practice. We don't talk about it because we don't believe we can do it. Don't believe we have the ability to know what the stock market's going to do. Long term, we do kind of know what it'll do. It'll beat bonds. It'll perform about like real estate over the long run, 20 years or so. But any shorter time frames, you know, your guess is as good as anyone's at any given moment, I think, as far as what will happen. Because the short-term price movement has a lot of emotion in it. Long-term prices have none. Zero. When you see a company's stock price over a 20-year period, it's reflective of what really happened. But what it is today, tomorrow, or next Wednesday could be very emotional, very fluffy. Sometimes it can create great investment opportunities because a stock can drop in price for no real reason. It can also create traps where it jumps up and gets you excited and you buy it high and then take the ride down. So I wouldn't speculate right now. I would never borrow money to invest ever, 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 never. Never did it ever. Never allowed anyone to do it in 40 years. I had clients ask, and I said, absolutely not. It's not allowed in our office. We have it in writing. It's in our manual. Nobody is allowed to borrow and invest at our company, ever. Why is that? Debt is guaranteed. Investments are not. If you I'll give you the story. Here's how it happens. The end of the 90s decade, the stock market averaged 17% per year for 10 years. So it's very common for some very smart, responsible young woman, let's say, to look at her house and say, you know what? I can borrow money against my house at 4% and put it in the stock market and make 17. So that's what they did at the end of that decade because they just saw 17% for 10 years. So what did the stock market do the next 10 years? It averaged zero. So you took out the loan, you paid interest for 10 years, and you didn't make a dime. Do not borrow to invest. Never borrow against your home to invest. Never borrow against your home for anything, in my opinion, except to put windows in, pay it off on line of credit quick in 3 or 4 years. If you use your equity in your home to buy a car instead of getting a car loan because the home equity is tax deductible, the tax savings to you might be $50 a month. And if the world goes crazy, you lose your job and can't pay for the car, now they're coming for the house instead of the car. For $50 a month, don't risk your house to save a little bit of money on taxes. Do not use the equity in your house to buy cars or consolidate debts. I wouldn't do that either. What do you do to consolidate debts? Dave Ramsey says, get a job delivering pizza at night and make extra money to pay that off. Refinancing is dangerous because there's a lot of psychological danger in that. I've heard ads recently where I've heard customers say, well, I'm going to take out a home equity loan and pay off all my debts. No, you didn't. You didn't pay off anything. You have just as much debt as you did yesterday. It's just in a different place. And what are they going to tell people? I paid off my debts. No, you didn't. You see, it makes you think you did something when you didn't do a darn thing. So do not consolidate your debts by taking home equity. Now, there are always exceptions to this. Extreme cases, last minute, bankruptcy is the only alternative. There are times when that is the right advice, but it is very rare. As a general rule, if you're doing well in your life, try to get your home paid off. Pay it as you agreed upon with your mortgage. Pay a little extra if you want to. Most experienced advisors like me, because we've lived enough life, we've raised a family, owned many houses, built a business, and don't borrow to invest, and surely don't use the equity in your home for such crazy purposes. Matter of fact, best way to find a great advisor is walk up to him right now and say, I'm going to take out all the equity in my house and give it to you to invest. If they're a good advisor, they're going to say, not in a million years am I doing that. And you're going to be shocked, but you're going to say, wow, don't you want a commission? And a good advisor will say, not that way. A good person will say, no. Now, somebody who's just a transaction person, doesn't care about who they're dealing with, they may go ahead and do that. Matter of fact, I bet there are plenty that would. But the very best people are going to behave in a fiduciary manner, and that means they're going to tell you what they really, really believe is best for you, not what's best for them to meet a quota or do transactions. Today, I think, is wonderful things are happening in the industry. We had some news this week regarding the new DOL rules, which is designed to require everyone in the financial business when handling retirement accounts to be a fiduciary. That means you must prove beyond a shadow of a doubt, if you're questioned, that whatever you recommended was in the best interest of that person, or you're in trouble. See, we've been doing it that way for 20 years, voluntarily. Now there are laws pending, but they're not passing because there are people in our country who are fighting it and are saying that we do not want all financial advisors to have to put the customer first. How about that, folks? Figure out who that group is and stay away from them, right? Why would you not want that rule to go through? There are some snags with it. There was some concerns about what will a small investor do, and that's already been worked out. Most of the major companies have come up with wonderful programs. I know I won't mention ours. It's selfish. But our brokerage company has a wonderful program for smaller accounts. No commissions, super low costs, great diversity, great company names that you know in there, investment funds, automatic rebalancing and all kinds of great stuff that years ago only people who had a lot of money could get. And now smaller investors, I think it's really has shocked everybody as how the opportunity has been improved, I think, for the small investor, at least in my world. I don't know where you might work if you're in a financial business, but we have come up with impressive alternatives for smaller accounts or younger people that are getting going, you know. So if you haven't heard yet, the fiduciary rule is still pending, and we hope, at least on this program, we hope that it goes through. It doesn't mean that everyone in the financial business that works on a commission basis is evil. As a matter of fact, I would be willing to wager that the vast majority of people that work in the financial business on a commission are very good, honest people that you can trust. The problem is if there's 5% that aren't, the commission game gives them too much power to hurt you. And that's why we got to stop it, in our opinion. But again, the majority of people in the business, I think, are good folks that want to do the right thing and make their father and their children proud of them. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, and I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. Friday night, roundtable wrap-up. Tune into the Money Talk Show every night at 5 p.m. That's right, where someone, member of our team, will be here every evening to help you out if you have a question. Between 5 and 6, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790, podcast at 790business.com. Get a lot of ideas from folks. People are shy about the radio. I've had some very successful clients that I invited on the show, and they were kind of afraid to do it. Most people would be nervous about it. I guess 30 years ago when I started doing it, I sat next to Don for 3 months and never said a word. You never knew I was there, any of you. I was listening and watching and learning, just sitting next to him, and that's how we did it. We just observe for a while, you know. It's been about 27 years now, I guess, this program's been here, and as I mentioned earlier, we do have a program every evening at 5. Monday night is Don Soa, the founder of the program. Tuesday night, Don and his very experienced daughter now, Donna Grace. And I like that Tuesday and Wednesday night because we have the 60-year-old and the 30-year-old. And it's important because if you are a young person and you want to be really aggressive with the money and you want to do, you know, really aggressive stuff, I'm not the right guy for that. I'm too afraid. My clients are my age. They're 60. They have gray hair. They have a large account balance, and they want to play it careful. You know, so you do that with that group of people for 10, 12 years. That's where your skills lie, in those type of investments, those type of angles, those types of tax laws. Individual stocks are, you know, really for the young people, I think, and I think they're really not appropriate at all for older folks. They carry the highest risk possible of any investment you can make, an individual stock. Hey, housing starts were off 7%. They were up for February, $125 million. In 2009, they bottomed at about 500,000, so it's up about, you know, almost triple since 2009. In housing starts, and that's part of why you know, markets have been a little bit soft. There are a lot of signs right now. Auto sales are soft. Housing starts are down. I think we have had our run here. It doesn't mean, because I can't predict anything, it doesn't mean the market will fall tomorrow in a great way. But remember, a very wise man once said, markets fall from highs. They don't fall from lows. And we all know that's true, right? That can't be inaccurate. Never did a market fall from a low point. They fall from high points, right? And who was that wise guy that said that? Well, that was me. 20 years ago, and I still say it's one of my favorite lines. Markets fall from high points, not low points. When markets are low, I'm excited. Most people are nervous and afraid. And if you're, I think if you're very well trained in this field, you're going to be kind of a contrary psychology to the client at any given moment. And that helps them a lot. It helps them a lot to see someone have faith when maybe all the other voices they're hearing don't have a lot of faith. The last major meltdown we had there in 2009, and I remember I've been through, you know, seven of these now. There were plenty of people in the major media, plenty, and some respectable financial people, both local and nationally, who were singing that silly song, "It's different this time. This market's not going to come back." Wrong again. The stock market in 80 years has gone down 12 times, and guess how many times it came back fully out of 12? All 12. Can you imagine? That yet when this happens, somebody's going to do it again. And then a person's going to be listening, a nice young man who's got a 401k plan. He's going to hear somebody on the radio who he thinks is credible say, "It's different this time. It's not going to come back." And he's going to sell out all of his money at the bottom and lose half and regret it badly 8 years later. Please, whoever's listening to this right now, if you get a chance to share your voice when this happens, do not be that person, because you will be embarrassed and you will be wrong again. Markets always recover and go back to prices that were previously established. Why do prices continue to go up in the long run? Free society, free people, constantly trying to find a better way to do everything. And it's not the same stuff that grows. You have a 10-year period where healthcare is the growth in the economy. Then the next 10 years, it might be technology. That's why they do go up always in the long run. If you look at other countries, you'll find the same thing. Anywhere along the world, you look at long-term, every stock market, the German stock market, every time it corrected, it recovered fully. France, every time, fully. Every time, fully. Every time, fully. Every time. What doesn't recover every time fully? Individual stocks. But markets are so big and they're broad that they do tend to recover. Now, do we guarantee they'll recover? We can't do that. The nature of the beast. We can't say that. We can't say it. What I have is a chart in my office, and I show clients, here's the history, here's 80 years. The record's 12-0. You want to bet against that? 12-0? And sell low and lose your money? And every time they go, "No, thanks, Steve. You saved me. Appreciate it." You know? You younger advisors, we're getting to the point, we're going to have some difficult times soon, I think. We've been through, had some good times, and it's part of the mix, you know? When clients are nervous and afraid, don't make them more nervous and afraid by talking technology to them. You know, talk to them like you're talking to your grandmother in a simple manner that they'll understand. If someone owns the S&P 500 and it goes down 30% because the economy took a dip, and someone said to me, "Tell me one quick reason why I shouldn't sell it." Don't talk for 20 minutes there, Mr. Radio Guy. Just give me one sentence. I would say, "You own America. What are you worried about?" I've had people talk for 25 minutes about why they should sell their investments, and I've said that to them, and they looked at me and said, "Thank you," and that's it. End of argument. You own America. What are you worried about? You're going to lose your money. The S&P 500 is America's 500 greatest companies. How in the world could all 500 of those companies all become worthless all at the same time? One makes cars, one builds houses, one makes cupcakes. One's a tech company, one's a financial company, one's a bank. And there are 500 of them, and they're giant, and most of them have no debt. How are all these 500 going to go to zero value? Come on. You know, there is no guarantee. But I do believe history gives us a sense of surety if we're patient enough in the long run. I also believe that real estate works the same way. Many of us, I never had this happen, but I heard of people buying real estate and, you know, unfortunately at a peak, and it goes down, down, down for quite some time. But real estate is a 20-year investment, and if you buy a good quality piece of real estate, even if you buy it at a high point, if you keep it 20 years, I'm pretty sure you'll do okay with it. We, as a society, have a short attention span. You know, that's natural. We're all human, me too, you know. And, so as things, we get late in the cycle, if you ask someone 8 years ago, what's long term, they would say 10 years. People on the street, if you ask them now, they'll say two or three. What happens is when the stock market does well, people incorrectly start using it for the wrong things. "Oh, I'm going to put my savings in there. It'll make all that money." What? No, because it could go down 40% when you need it. So don't do that, you know. And don't put money in wrong risk categories. And don't be worried also about what your cash is earning. I have a good amount of cash right now. I'm 60 years old. I recommend that my age people have almost an annual income. in cash. And you know what? I don't care what it earns. It's safe. It's guaranteed. It can't go down. That's why it's there. And it'll make a little bit of interest, but not much, you know. So don't put a, don't make your savings account into a stock portfolio. That's a improper use of the tool. And I assure you, if you stick with it long enough, it will punish you if you do that. In the same breath, don't you dare have your IRA money in a savings account, right? And don't have your savings money in stocks because they're the wrong tool for the job. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back. 28 years, I always wanted to do that just once. Hey, year to date, the S&P 500 up about 2%. Europe-type stocks are down slightly, and the Dow Jones is about flat. Now, I've talked to you many times before about not trusting your ears. If I asked all of you that are listening tonight, if I polled you, if I could visit you and ask you, what do you think the stock market performance has been so far this year? But you'd all say it's up. That's how it sounds. You know, I mean, I'm going to wager it. Most people say, oh, it's up 10%. It's up. It's not really even up, hardly at all, year to date. Another reason why I like dividends. Dividends are consistent and predictable and reliable. And more importantly, dividends are proof of profitability. A company won't pay a dividend if they're not really making profits. So you remember that problem we had in the 90s with CEOs lying about things, fudging numbers? If you're paying good, strong dividends, company's got to be profitable. You couldn't pay the dividend. So it's a real good sign of that things are running smoothly. At my age, I'm not interested in any investment that doesn't pay at least 3% in dividend. That way, if it doesn't go up in value, I still get my 3% no matter what, on the dollar, always. You know, so it's a good strategy. 3% from dividend, 3% from growth, a 6% total return, and Stevens very satisfied. But that's reflective of my age. I'm almost 60. When I was 40, I wouldn't be talking like this. That's not good enough, 6%. I want 15. You know, that's how you use aggressive growth funds. You put the money in every month. Also, risk levels need to change when you stop adding to an account. If you're adding to an account and it goes up and down in value and you're buying more shares, that's opportunity because you're purchasing more shares at lower prices. Once you stop adding, like when you retire, no more adding, right? Now you may either hold the money or withdraw on it. I do believe you need to reduce your risk level quite a bit when you stop adding to an account because the risk is actually your friend when you're adding to it, and it, when you're not adding to it, it is not your friend. So if you find yourself being a little nervous about things right now, you're not alone. And if your account is 80% stocks or 100% stocks and you're not young, please see someone soon to get some advice on, or do it yourself if you feel capable, or call me here at 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. No charge for the advice. But I do think it'd be a good time if you're, you know, you consider yourself getting closer to retirement. I'm probably 10 years away, and I'm moderate. I've gone from aggressive to moderate, and I won't go back to aggressive again at my age. And maybe someday I'll be content and have enough saved that I can be conservative. Wouldn't it be nice to have a big pile of money invested safely? And maybe you won't like that, but I do. Now, you got to have some risk. You got to have some investments. Tonight, we want to talk about a very odd little topic. It's called Topic 409. I believe we're going to have a podcast available on this topic alone down the road a little bit. Topic 409 is a part of the tax code that just says if you're in the lower tax brackets, and for couples, it's up to like $400,000. That's a lot of money, and very few people make $400,000. So you could make, as a couple, you know, $200,000 and invest cash money only, not IRA money, into things that make long-term capital gains and something called qualified dividends. These two investments were unchanged as far as their tax rates in the recent tax bill pushed through by President Trump. Many things did change. These things did not. Brackets did a bit, but this basic law did not. And so what it means is if you're a couple and you have, let's say, $50,000, let's talk about retired couples, and you have $40,000 of income on paper, some Social Security benefits and a little pension, and the rest of your money has to come out of your investments, right? that couple can, if they have $40,000 of base income, could take about $35,000 a year of special dividends and capital gains and pay no tax on it. It's a little opportunity that very few people are aware of. I think it's because today a lot of people do taxes on their own with like TurboTax, and even our CPA friends use the software. And so when you hand them a 1099 for these type of investments that maybe I designed for you, the software takes it off the proper column off the 1099, and you get the reduced income taxes, but a lot of people aren't aware that it's happening. They're not even aware of it. So you can get long-term capital gains up until your income hits about $77,000 for a couple. And above that, then you're taxed at a lower rate than you would be on ordinary income. Ordinary income rates are what you pay taking money out of IRAs and pensions. It is the highest tax rate there is, always. So you want to try to avoid income being ordinary income. You can't avoid dividend from your bank being ordinary income. You cannot avoid your paycheck being ordinary income. But you can take some money out of the bank where it's earning ordinary income and very low rates and invest in things that pay 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6% are available. And quite possibly, if your income is a good amount below $77,000, and many retired people are, this can be tax-free. One of the most eye-popping moments in my office is when a couple comes in, last time this happened, and you know they're living modestly on about $45,000 a year, and they have cash in the bank, and they're frustrated. It's earning nothing. They're not getting anywhere with it, and they're looking for an alternative. But keep in mind, these people are retired, and so we can't have them at high risk. And they're just very, very surprised and shocked to learn of all the things that are available that they're not aware of, that you can invest in and get tax-free dividends up to, you know, until your income hits about $77,000. After that, you start to pay tax on those dividends and gains, but at reduced rates. And people with incomes up to about $400,000 can't get it tax-free at that level, but you can get a lower tax on it than would otherwise, you know, be the case. Now, why would the government do this? They're trying to motivate and reward us by giving you a tax reduction. They're saying, hey, man, do this. This is good for you. They're trying to motivate you. Also trying to motivate us all to plan, save, and be independent, financially independent in retirement. Our country is stronger, much stronger, when we are all stronger. And so financial planning is one of the greatest careers that ever came out. It's what got me into this business 40 years ago. I did not come into this business to be a salesman. I did not enter this field to be a broker. Broker, Jerry Seinfeld joke. I came into the business to be a certified financial planner, which what I am. Now, topic 409, check it out on the IRS website. Just type in topic 409 and you'll find it. And if you're in the lower brackets, there's all kinds of opportunity there for you. Keep in mind, this only works with cash money. But one of the biggest complaints I have heard for the past several years is clients saying, I got money in the bank. I don't want it in risky stuff. But do you know of anything that's better than 0.5%? You know, and I do. And they're called qualified dividends. How about municipal bonds at 3% tax-free? If you're 65 years old and you have a good amount of money saved, 3% and no tax, that's a nice return. It's not a nice return for my son Nathan, who's 33. It's too low. But it's fine for somebody my age who has saved up a bunch, you know? So qualified dividends, topic 409. Now, those of you that are my age will remember the Beach Boys song, 409. The opening lyrics to that song talks about saving your pennies and dimes to buy a 409. The 409, of course, was a car with a big engine. Was that a Plymouth 409? My dad's listening. He's a mechanic. He'd know. He's probably laughing right now in Bristol saying, yeah, Steve, it was a 409 Plymouth, I think it was. Anyway, 409 is a part of the tax law that is there to encourage middle to lower income people to invest in these things so you get a tax break. Now, if you're very successful and you make $1 million a year, you don't get any break at all. It's not aimed at you, you know. These tax breaks and these tax things are actually aimed at people in those brackets. We have a caller? No? Oh, is it the 409 was a Chevrolet? Was it? Oh, thank you. Was that one of our mechanic friends calling in? Was it my dad? No. 409 was a Chevy, huh? I don't know about that. I got my doubts on that one. But thank you for the input. I appreciate it. Great little song. Great tax law. And people are just shocked. Quick little story. Met a gentleman. I knew him for years. And he came in retiring, came in to see me. And he had a bunch of company stock. He worked at a bank. And the gentleman was going to have $2,000 a month of income from Social Security. He's single. And he told me he thinks he needed about $4,000 a month. Total income, no debts, did a real great job, nice and clean. And he was going to take money out of his 401k plan, which would be fully taxed. Well, he's single. If he has an income of Social Security of $2,000 a month, that's $24,000 a year, he can take another $12,000 or $1,000 a month in qualified dividends or sell some of that stock he has, and the capital gain will be tax-free as well. He was shocked. People just, this is one of those little weird little tax laws that got by everybody. Didn't get by me. I don't know why. I happened to stumble into it. And for the first 2 or 3 years I worked with it, I was told by other professionals that I was missing something. That can't be. So I started printing IRS publications and handing it to people. So you want to argue with them, go right ahead. Here's the horse's mouth, you know. So it's an incentive. If your income is over $400,000 a year and you're a couple, this doesn't help you, okay? I know that 99% of you listening have an income below that level. I know you do, because how few people make $400,000 a year? That's very rare. So you could be a couple, a power couple, I call them, and make $230,000. There's tax advantages for you there. And you probably, I know you're not aware of it, because I meet people in the office on a regular basis. I did one today. Very successful, very smart people, not even aware of these things. And a part of the reason is, if you do have these investments, I have to remind my clients all the time of the tax advantages, because it goes through the tax system. And the way it works, people don't notice it, that it's happening, you know. So if I get 3% tax-free on some money, in my tax bracket, that's like getting, you know, 5.5. I'd have to get 5.5 in a taxable investment to pay the tax and then put 3 in my pocket to spend. So 3% is like 5.5 for me. And 5.5 isn't too bad, and it's also very safe. Tax-free bonds are not bank accounts, but compared to stocks, they are much, much, much less risk. That's why they're much less return as well. So if you are in retirement or not, check out Topic 409 on the IRS website, or just Google it, and you'll find a bunch of printouts you can check out where you might fit into all this. Or give us a call here at the program if you have a question. This is Steve Bove, and we'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the program, Money Talk. Hey, thanks to our listener who called to help me out, and he or she was correct. The 409 was a Chevrolet engine, 1962. I just, for some reason, thought it was a Plymouth. But anyway, thank you very much for that input. And the lyric to that song is, well, I saved my pennies and I saved my dimes, for I knew there would be a time when I would buy a brand new 409. Giddy up, 409. Anyway, I thought it was a funny way for you all to remember that you may be missing something here. And if you're my age, you know, you're not going to forget Giddy Up 409, right? From the financial guy. You're not going to forget that. That's too weird. Anyway, check it out. Talk to your tax people about it. They'll understand it. They might not. They might not. I ran into a few real good ones that were experienced that really hadn't had experience with this yet. Most of us here in Rhode Island end up in our retirement with a house paid for, hopefully, a little savings, and retirement accounts. So we don't usually have a lot of investable money outside of a retirement account, and that's what I'm talking about. So it's not a large group of people who usually can do this. But someone who doesn't have what if you don't have a 401k plan at work, or there's no match? A lot of my clients around my age also choose to reduce their 401k contributions at this age down to where they're getting the full match, of course, always. And then any dollars above that that's not being matched, they pursue these tax breaks with me in a portfolio I call conservative with tax advantages. Now, every investment in the portfolio does not have a tax advantage, because that would be too narrow. It would not be diverse enough. So there are some traditional type bonds in there that you pay regular tax on, but about out of 7 holdings, like 4 of them are tax advantaged. One of them is tax free. It's designed to produce a dividend of about 5.25% with tax advantages. So it's like getting 7. And I'll tell you right now, folks, in this crazy world, if you can get a return anywhere near there, I think you did okay. Last year was a crazy year for the real aggressive stuff. Now, so if you were younger, your 401k plan might have done 30% last year. Remember, it can go minus 30 next year, too, right? The investment that didn't go up 30% last year can't go down 30 next year either. It's a double-edged sword. So if you're my age and your investments made 40% last year, change them immediately, please. That's not supposed to be. That's a very aggressive position. I would recommend 80-20 for young people, 60-40 at my age, and then down from there. There's a term, those of you who invest on your own, if you're younger, you want to check this out. Google efficient frontier. And it's a mathematical calculation that says the more stock in your account versus bonds, the higher your return will be. And that works until about 80% stocks. After that, you get more risk with only a little more return. So I think even for younger people, I like 80-20. I'm not a big believer of 100%. Unless it's your 401k plan, you're very young, and you're plowing the money in every month, then that's fine. But if you have an account that's by design, or you something you had to do a rollover with, I would be more diverse than that. Today, you can invest $500,000 in 10 different very low-cost ETFs and end up with 5,380 different investments, but you only have to look at 10 of them on a sheet when you get your statement because they're mutual funds. One of the other things I run into a lot the last few years is people coming to me with a statement. They hand it to me. I browse it quickly, and I look at them. I say, you can't understand a single thing here. And they say, boy, you're good at this. You did it that quick. I've been in your office 5 seconds. I say, you know why I know you can't understand it? And they say, how come? I say, because I can't. I have 40 years experience at this, and I don't want a statement that has 71 pages and 160 different things for me to look at. You got to get it down to a lower number than that, I think. And I think 10 is adequate. You can have quite a bit of money today in 10 different ETFs that are commission-free, totally liquid if you want to sell them, and, hey, maybe even some tax advantages if you qualify for Topic 409. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. If you don't have earned income, you can't make IRA contributions. This is something we stumbled into in the office this week. Client was putting money in a Roth IRA through checking account withdrawal, you know, each month, which is a great idea, and great that they did that because that creates a discipline. But then they stopped working, had no income, and didn't tell us. So they put money in an IRA for the year, and at the end of the year, when you look at the tax, they don't qualify for IRA. And this is the other thing that people don't know. If you have no paycheck money this year, you can't put money in an IRA. You could have $1 million in cash. You can't do it. And people are shocked by this. Well, I have a pension that's not called earned income. That's passive. Earned income means you earned it in a job working this year, this calendar year. So if you are funding IRAs like that on an automatic withdrawal basis and you stop your income completely, your paycheck money, make sure you talk to the people who handle the Roth IRA to stop those contributions because you cannot put money in an IRA account if you don't have earned income. One exception, you have no earned income, but your spouse does, then you can do it. Because you're married, you can use your spouse's income to qualify you for this very valuable benefit. Now, this is a classic example of what a lot of the gay rights folks would be arguing about. They want to have that same privilege. Why should a man and a woman have that, not two people who just happen to be partners for life? And I get that. That's a very good argument. It's a big tax advantage, you know. Another one, if you're married in America and you die and leave your spouse an IRA, they can just take it as an IRA and go on like it's their IRA. If you're not a spouse, you got to take it all out and pay all the taxes. So that's another big point that the gay rights community is striving to have, and I agree with them. That's something, I guess it should be fair to everybody has that privilege with that one person that they've chosen, you know. Can you imagine if you had a spouse who had a $500,000 IRA, they die, and you either have to take it all out and pay taxes or you don't? Wow, what a difference. Because the tax bill is going to be $150,000 on that. Wouldn't it be nicer if the person you named, one person in the world you can do it with, that's my special person, they can keep it as an IRA. They don't have to take the money out. I think that's a good rule. We should work towards that one. But tax laws are complicated. Most of us in the business avoid them, and we leave it to the CPAs. I happen to have some sort of strange, nerdy side to me that I enjoy taxes. I find opportunity there, and I also find a lot of great topic for the program in the tax code over the years. One closing thought on taxes. Many years ago, we all heard that someday you'll retire and you'll be in a low tax bracket than when you worked. I will be, but you probably will not be. The brackets are very wide now. A couple can go from like $70,000 to $170,000, and you're in the same tax bracket. Many years ago, the brackets were small, and there were many of them. Today, there are only two or three or four of them, and they're broad. So the idea that you'll be in a lower bracket when you retire is not likely any longer, although that was probably true at one time, but probably going back like almost 20 years ago before that was the case. One more comment on the spousal IRA. Those of you that might be aware of this, for years, if you didn't have any income for the year, but your spouse did, you could do an IRA, but only $500. That's like useless. That's not enough, you know. That was the law for 25 years. It changed about 10 years ago. And now if your spouse has enough income to qualify you for a full IRA contribution of $5,500, you can do the whole thing. And so I've met a few people who said to me, I've heard you talk about that spousal thing, but that doesn't, it sounds good, but it's not enough. And because they're still thinking the law is $500 limit, but it's not. It's a full-blown contribution you can make as long as your spouse has the income to cover it. And that's why also when you retire and you have an IRA and you start taking out minimum distributions, people come in and want to make an IRA contribution one year. Well, I told my accountant this year, and Steve, I want to let you know I put $6,000 in an IRA. You can't do it. You cannot do it. It's not an opinion. It's a law. If you're 70 and a half and you have an IRA account, and you have mandatory distributions. Now, why is that? The reason that they will not let you put the money in is because it's not good for you. If you're putting money in and then taking it back out the same year, you're running the money through the system, incurring costs and charges, and the money's only in there for a little bit of time. It's not good for you to do that. So, and I assure you, most companies will catch that, and they won't let you do it. So if you stop your earned income, meaning your paycheck money, and you're doing IRAs, you can no longer do those IRAs. If you happen to be investing on an automatic checking account withdrawal basis, like the fellow I told you about, that's how you get into a little bit of trouble. Now, it's not a big problem. You sign a form. It's called a recharacterization. The company backs out the contributions. They give them back to you. And any interest that you would have earned during that period of time, you must pay taxes on, which will be very small. But the basic contribution that you did make, you don't lose it or anything like that. It'll just be pulled out of the account and refunded back to you under the title of a recharacterization. Hey, I want to thank you all for joining us for 27 years, and we plan on being around for a lot longer. So we got the young folks in place here. Tune into Tuesday and Wednesday night to hear Donna Grace and Nathan. They're our young bloods, and of course, back at the office, we got a great team of folks that support the show as well. A little out of time for mentioning them. Have a good, safe weekend out there, folks. Weather's still cold. Tune in Monday night, of course, for Don Sower right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. That I used to know, folks never adjusted to the great big world. I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio. Can the babies around the sack on their back, moving careful and slow? It's money that matters. You hear what I say? It's money that matters in the USA.